Hey guys, welcome to My Epic Movies. Once more, we go behind the old Patreon paywall and dust off Silver Bullet. Now, this is a strange Stephen King adaptation. It has Gary Busey as an alcoholic uncle who makes a handicapped kid a high-speed powered electric wheelchair, and they fight a werewolf, hence Silver Bullet. It's nuts, it's fun. If you can find it, enjoy, because it is truly remarkable. Thanks, guys. This week, Gary Busey fucks a werewolf. Wait, let me try that again.
Oh, Gary my. Wolf,
Gary Werewolf fights a Busey. I'm Nick Hoffman, Riff Rocks in a Prague, tallest person in the room. And on panel, we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, and you need two silver bullets to kill me.
Author Matthew W. Quinn, who saw this in high school and got scared by the beginning, but the beginning now just isn't so scary.
Well, this is the end. My only friend.
What this movie is, which is Silver Bullet, based on the Stephen King story, is the non-union Mexican equivalent of an American werewolf in London.
Yeah, so short story made shorter. Corey Haim, right? Corey Haim?
Hey. Yes, Corey Haim.
Is a kid in a wheelchair. And he and his sister just don't get along, but he gets along better with her than the friend that never appears again. In the meantime, people are being mauled to death by a werewolf, and it's up to him, his alcoholic uncle, Gary Busey.
Oh and, my God, Gary Busey in this movie.
To fight the werewolf, who turns out to be, auditioning for a David Lynch movie.
Several, actually.
Yeah. So, Matt, I'm going to give you a cred here. I had heard of this movie, never seen it. You wanted us to do this. Tell us about it.
Okay, it's based on the book The Cycle of the Werewolf, which is like a novella, which I read in middle school. I think the middle school library had it, so if your parents signed a permission slip, you could read it, because it has some unbelievably gory illustrations of werewolves killing people.
So this is an illustrated?
An illustrated novella by Stephen King from the 80s.
Meanwhile, of course, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, you could just check that out.
Those are just bums, Madonna's book sacks. Like, you could just...
Okay, the Scary Stories illustrations are disturbing. These illustrations in Cycle of the Werewolf are just incredibly bloody.
Was it a color?
Yes.
No kidding. Wow.
Just, when you have a second, hit up like on Amazon or something, or just Google search Cycle of the Werewolf and you can find some more.
Cycle of the Werewolf.
It's getting there.
I was about to ask, who drew these?
I don't know. I just read it once years and years ago.
Oh, I'm going to draw something with blood.
Oh, boy.
And so it's set in a town in Stephen King country, Maine, called Tarker's Mill or something like that.
That sounds right.
And it's the movie...
Moth Tarkin's
The movie is kind of told like the Waltons or something, which is all like an extended flashback. So we know at least one person's going to survive.
Well, that ruins the horror, if I may jump in here.
100%.
It's all told in flashback, so it's like, oh, okay.
Remember the summer where the werewolf came around?
It's kind of realistic in the sense like a slasher that kills like 20 people in one movie. That would cause like the whole surrounding community to panic. Like they have a curfew, everyone's running around the town with guns.
That part's fine, but there's no suspense though if somebody's narrating it in flashback.
Well, one person is narrating. So we know the sister doesn't die.
Right, exactly.
But what about everyone else?
Why should I care, though, if the sister's being threatened?
Also, I will agree with Sudsy for half a second because it's stupid in that she's describing scenes she could never have seen.
That's a good point.
Right? Like, and by the way, it's not like the story is so complicated we couldn't have figured it out without the sister being like, I remember that one summer where all of a sudden... They threw a snake down my dress. Meanwhile, the Reverend was plotting. Like,
you know,
why?
Poltergeist has already come out at this point, so why wasn't that a Zelda Rubinstein?
Oh,
champ! I remember the werewolf when I was a child.
That's 100% next season, right?
Oh, yeah.
Big it time. Has to be. My wife is not one who, like me, watched a lot of horror movies when we were young. We both love Poltergeist. Mm. My God, that's such a classic.
In the Guyver, Daniels asked me what the hell kind of childhood I had. My childhood is we didn't have cable, but the basic cable had Sci-Fi Channel and Cartoon Network.
Oh, yeah, that was everyone's childhood back in the day. Or at least,
yeah, I had no our idea. Childhood. It was all...
No, I didn't have Nickelodeon or USA or TNT.
Wait, but you said you had...
It was a basic package. It was like a broadcast channel. It was like the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, wow.
And Sci-Fi was cheaper than Nickelodeon?
You know, my folks didn't like some stuff as on Nickelodeon or MTV.
But Sci-Fi was okay?
Yeah.
No, this is an interview for his parents one day, because that's something.
That has to be a choice on their part, because I remember
they also didn't really package it very well. You paid everything.
Because I had Nickelodeon, but not Sci-Fi. I think your parents intentionally blocked some channels.
They didn't have the ability to block it. It was either get everything or get nothing.
Until then they eventually
got rid of the Sci-Fi and Cartoon Network, and then mom and dad decided we could have cable.
Okay, you and I need to talk off mic, because I think they were blocking those things, because Sci-Fi and Cartoon Network are the basic ones. Nickelodeon too. Disney Channel was the expensive one. It all came standard, and I lived about a block away from you.
The sports channels were the expensive ones. Yeah. So if you like one...
It was Disney and ESPN2. The first one was... It's drug stuff. The first one's free, motherfucker. But if you want to watch Magic the Gathering on ESPN3, you
got
to pay.
Yeah, so you guys got all the Nickelodeon and whatnot, and I got all the monster movies I could possibly want.
And apparently,
they were owned by the same person. You're lying, you child.
Oh, child, you're lying about your werewolf movie.
So, in the meantime, this is a movie told over 7 years, apparently. Matt was trying to explain this.
Is this the book Cycle of the Werewolf? Because remember, the full moon is only about 2 days a month.
There.
So it takes, it's 1 day a month.
I thought it was two.
Matt. Their wolf.
But so the point is, the cycle of the werewolf, the novel, takes place over about a whole year. It's kind of hinted at that there's July, because they cancel the carnival, September, because that's when Uncle Red gives the kid fireworks, and Halloween night is when things go down.
Oh, you know it's a good move if Gary Busey's handing out fireworks to minors.
We need to talk for 12 hours about Gary Busey. We're going to give him 10 minutes here. Gary Busey, young, beautiful, handsome, horse-faced man, is an alcoholic in this. He plays an uncle who just divorced a wife.
The third time.
Yeah. And yet, despite that, he's depicted as, like, the only... adults that cares?
Translation, he could go into any franchise sports bar and just come back with some pussy.
Which he does in this movie.
He sure does. He hooks up with someone we don't even see him meet. But at the same time, he's also the only one that, A, the kids respect, but B, he has a critical eye, but he listens to the kids and no one else does. So Gary Busey, hero of the movie. Right?
And I guess in the sense there can be a hero in this movie.
Piss on the Mets. Piss on the Phillies.
I think Marty's a protagonist.
Who?
Yes. The boy in the wheelchair.
Yeah, Corey Haim.
Well, right, but he has agency, but no power. He needs an adult, and Gary Busey is not only the adult who apparently... Corey Haim is handicapped, and Gary Busey makes him not one, but two high-powered wheelchairs, which is spectacular.
Yeah, he drives around the town in a wheelchair that functions more like a go-kart.
All right. So this is a movie featuring a young kid with no agency and an alcoholic relative who is an inventor that can build himself. So this is an extended Rick and Morty episode.
This is Back to the Future.
Come in, Marty. There's a werewolf. Kill the werewolf now, Marty.
Oh, jeez. I don't know, Uncle Gary Busey. I don't know. What are you talking about?
It's that pasta. He's a werewolf, Morty. Marty.
And it doesn't help that the kid's name is Marty.
Like, yeah. When did this come out?
83?
It was an 80s Stephen King adaptation, I know that.
Well, I mean, if it came out in 83, then this is before Back to the Future, then.
Ooh.
We're
85, it's the same year.
Same year, okay. So, Matt, I know you're the one who recommended this. Honestly, I can barely understand the plot sequence in this movie. It opens with like a werewolf attack, and then it opens with the introduction to Marty. But going on? Walk us through this.
The killing starts at the beginning of the year, and it's a town drunk who's killed in the railroad tracks, thinking he was hit by a train. It turns out.
These railroad track trains are just coming up and hitting people.
It wasn't.
What?
But no one recognized this at the time as the beginning of the fact that, you know, by the end of the year, like 8 or 9 people are dead. So every month is another killing. The book is actually much worse than the movie in terms of bloodshed, and like the girl who's friends with Marty, I think the dad in the book like cheated on the mom, infected her with an STD. And then snuck out of town to cheat on her some more, and then the werewolf killed him. Good riddance.
That's par for course.
Well, we almost get some of that here because after the original killing, they cut to, it's like a Sunday evening in the park kind of a scene.
They're raising money for something.
And like people are
trying to save the clock tower.
That's right.
Marty,
you gotta come back to me. If we can't figure out the time. Thank you, I'm helping out with the joke. But at this point, Corey Haim and his friend asshole who disappears for the rest of the movie
after egging him on to like harass his sister until
they find a snake. Yes. They throw the snake at her. They scare her. She's trying to hit on one of them older boys.
Mm-hmm.
And
then she ends up covered in mud thanks to their little prank.
Yeah, she tears her pantyhose. It's awful. And Corey Haim eventually makes up. Like, it starts out with him being an asshole and then redeeming himself.
It's his sister, right? It's not like his friend. It's his older sister.
The friend is the instigator.
Right.
No. The instigator is him because he finds the snake. The friend just says we should use it on your sister, right? Like, what I'm saying is he's a much more established character than we usually get in these horror movies, right? Like, because we see him being an asshole, he learns his lesson, he pays for the pantyhose, and then they try to establish him as a person, right? But the whole setup here is that we then smash cut to Gary Busey being a drunk alcoholic, which is
as opposed to the sober alcohol. Well,
he's drinking heavily and teaching Marty to play cards while making vaguely racist metaphors about not having a Chinaman's chance, which I don't know what that means.
It means nothing.
No one knows.
It means nothing.
So I guess maybe if there's a billion of them, the odds of any one individual, is that what it means?
Need to explain racism, man.
And when we talk about...
Someone has to mean something.
When we talk about Gary Busey drinking, we mean he's... taking giant chugs from a bottle of Captain Morgan
in front of his nephew.
I'm just having a few beers with the boy. Like, dude. And, I mean, you mentioned already at this point, he wakes up next to a lady, and that is some world-class hangover acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's just, why are you calling me? Three in the morning.
Wait.
I saw a werewolf!
And the werewolf. I blew out the werewolf's eyeball with a firecracker!
Wait a sec. Acting? Yeah, Gary Busey probably has some experience with this.
I
don't think he needs to rely on that experience for that scene. I think that was real time.
That's right. He just found a PA and he's like, you want to get drunk?
Mm-hmm. Fixed
with a booster. But I mean, regardless, he gives the Corey Haim, him, he gives Morty a bunch of fireworks as a gift, effectively. And, I mean, you got your bottle rockets, you got your blasters, you got the things that now in Georgia we can buy in a Kroger because we don't care about anyone in the state.
Well, we need to destroy any werewolf eyes just in case.
Werewolf eyes.
And one so look at you and I can't disguise. I got werewolf eyes.
Anything to get Matt to sing, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He steals the episode.
I feel the magic between you and I.
His werewolf thighs.
Jesus Christ. Better or worse than Can I Borrow a Feeling?
Can I borrow a feeling? Can I blend a cup of love?
Well, he doesn't have any feeling in his legs. He might need to borrow some.
Ooh, spicy, Matt. Dude, that kid should die like the lady from Gremlins, where they hacked the Gremlin elevator chair.
He has like a chair that takes him up and down the stairs.
Yes, just like Mrs. Deagle in Gremlins. You're right.
That would have been great.
Yeah, he's got that kid has some phenomenal upper body strength. Like he sneaks out by climbing down like a garret with his arms, his legs just hanging there.
Dude, next season we're doing Gremlins too, right? With Hulk Hogan.
Get out of here, Gremlins! And Chris Lee and who else in that movie? John Glover, I think.
Who matters? You got Gremlins too.
Got Phoebe Cates and Billy Batson, whatever his name is.
Billy Batson? You mean Captain Marvel? That Billy Batson?
That's funny.
Well, I know you're talking about. I forget his name, but
Billy Peltzer is a character. I can't remember the actor.
Yeah.
He hasn't really done very much.
You're fine. No, it's Billy Batson. You're good.
Shazam.
That's right. I mean, the plot of this movie is now they're trying to stop the werewolf. Like, that's it. We've established the werewolf as a killer. We had some good killing scenes at the beginning.
We see Everett McGill, most famously from Twin Peaks, as Big Ed Hurley, the gas station owner who's married to Nadine, who also in that show wears an eye patch.
Right.
So foreshadowing in this movie.
Yes. Okay. So the first.
Now, you know, Daniel, I like eye patches on people.
Okay. So the town drunk.
I don't know what you're trying to do there, Nicholas. Hello, it's me, David Lynch. And I think Nicholas was trying to do an impersonation of me, but he did a fucking piss poor job. I have to tell you what, he did a piss poor job.
And for that, we're going to make him go to the church with the werewolves, Stephen. He's going to go to church with the werewolves that play the piano.
You know, technically every church has werewolves in it.
Now, David, could you just because you're here and you're a guest on our podcast, just for a second, could you give me the weather report?
Well, right here, it's 67 degrees Fahrenheit. That's Fahrenheit because we live in the United States. And the low tonight is going to be 52. Tomorrow is going to be cloudy with a 20% chance of rain.
This is what, and depending on what time of the month it is, a 30% chance of werewolf.
I will say,
fuck are you doing, Mr. Quinn?
That's right.
I'm stealing your identity like a single white female, David.
Oh, that's bad. I will say, Daniel. No, sorry, David. there's a Patreon level now where you, in fact, can say, I will be your alarm. Wake up, Nick. Wake up. Wah, wah, wah.
Wait, wah. Are you trying to do David Lynch or Pee Wee Herman?
Yes.
Yes, exactly right.
Welcome. Well, you know, I like Everett McGill, but in this movie, he's just not cutting the mustard.
You see the preacher?
Yes. He is the preacher.
Everett McGill, world-class actor.
He was also in Quest for Fire. I'm not sure if that's a Stay Tuned. That's the movie about the cavemen. Mission Briefing episode, License to Kill.
He's always a tall, strong, mostly silent type. He has a good square jaw.
Potential future episode, Under Siege 2, he was in.
Oh, 100% Stay Tuned. That first one, Gary Busey, of course, Tommy Lee Jones, Miss September or whatever. The second one on the train. Hey, buddy. That's how you make a cake in a microwave. And you're just like, okay, terrorist.
No, boy.
Is it Alyssa Milano? Who's his daughter?
Not Alyssa Milano. I forget.
Yeah, of course. You're fucked.
Anyway, the 80s were weird when it came to Stephen King, because there were a ton of classic Stephen King movies that came out then. Not just The Shining, but...
when was Misery? Because that got an
Misery Oscar. Misery was
1990, oh, but that's a masterpiece.
Got an Oscar for that, right?
She sure did. And
there was James Caan?
James Caan. And great. Rob Reiner was the director. But
one of his best.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Christine came out in the 80s. Maximum Overdrive.
Previous episode.
Yes.
And we started the decade... No, maybe the end of the previous decade with Christine De Palmas... De Palmas Carey.
And then Pet Sematary came out in the 80s.
And the sequel also was the 80s, right?
It came out a little later because Eddie Furlong was in that, but...
Ooh, God help us. So that would make it 92, 93.
Somewhere around there. But either way, in the 80s, Stephen King was a god.
Well,
I'm not surprised that this exists, but there was already so many good adaptations of his work. And this just felt lazy.
Well, it felt like a lot of things. Some people showed up, others did not.
Children of the Corn, I think, was in the 80s too, right? The first one, at least?
Yeah, the first one, because I saw a little clip of it, the We Have Your Woman Outlander sequence. It has that kind of coloration that looks like an 80s movie.
Oh, the South Park episode with Cartman?
Outlander, we have your woman!
This is another movie Matt has not seen.
No, I think...
Not in its entirety, no.
I think he's right, though. That is where that sequence is from. It's absolutely. Children of the Corn.
Because I remember that scene, the coloration looks like an 80s movie.
Yeah. I think it was the film stock, I guess. But yeah, guess. You're right. It came out in the 80s. But either way, that just emphasizes even the shit Stephen King properties were becoming movies at this point.
No, he probably wrote one out of every four movies.
Yeah, because he wrote the screenplay for this. Because I noticed that in the credits early on, right before the drum gets it. Mm. Screenplay by Stephen King.
All right. Well, I mean, I didn't know he could write screenplays. I mean,
Maximum Overdrive.
It's different writing a screenplay versus writing a novel, which...
Yeah, but it's probably... But they overlap much better than directing Maximum Overdrive.
Mm. Well, either way... I have a feeling this just exists because it has Stephen King's name attached to it, which is shit, because there were already so many good Stephen King adaptations.
This wasn't. And
plus, I mean, why werewolves? I mean, what was scary about a werewolf?
Well, the idea that, you know, the werewolf is only dangerous a day or two a month. So when it has a slasher movie level of killing, you have to take months and months and months.
That's always been the thing with werewolves, though, right? I mean, the Wolfman, it was the same thing. You had to wait until a full moon. What did Stephen King do that was really that different?
And you have a disabled protagonist.
Okay.
Great.
Yes, granted, that is something new. But, I mean...
the preacher being the werewolf, spoilers.
Yeah,
for, I mean, Protestants are evil. We get that.
Yes. But, I mean...
I'm casting lightning at him because remember I can do the voice of Palpatine.
Hey, wait a sec, Matt. Looking at you. What's that on the side of your head there? You got a little bump there, and there's another one actually right there.
This is and the last thing heard was Daniel screaming.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a found footage recording of, you know, the day.
Oh,
the Dark Lord came.
Oh, Matt's ending of his home videos is the ending of the Blair Witch, where I'm just facing away in a corner somewhere, and then all of a sudden someone dies.
Well, I mean, there are movies we've done where you could face into the movie for long enough and you'd die of boredom, so...
But yeah, this is a pretty standard werewolf movie. I mean, werewolves show up, they kill people, the kids see them, but nobody believes them, including the drunk uncle. And the title comes from when he tries to believe him and he melts down like, what, a St. Christopher medallion?
Yeah, one of the Marty has like a saint's medal and Big Sister has a crucifix. Mm. And so they melt them down to make one silver bullet.
Right.
And I'm not sure 100% sure how much Gary Busey actually believes them until the bear wolf, because that's what it looks like.
We need to talk about that scene for a million years. Like, that, like, old-timey Maynard bulletsmith. Oh, you want me to make you a silver bullet, do you?
This is like, one of the best things I've ever done.
And he's, like, there, like, taking their, like, I imagine, like, confirmation jewelry.
Well,
melting it down, he's like, and like we have for like 10 minutes like a How Stuff Works music, like from Discovery Channel. Now you see, the smelter's gonna heat it up to exactly 500 degrees.
Well, like, take it from me, Nicholas. Take it from me. There are a lot of quirky people in these small towns.
Oh yeah, like that guy who's obviously wants to be sheriff because he keeps cutting down the existing sheriff to the point where he's leading a posse.
It's an election year.
Wait,
there's campaign posters.
Was that the Lemmy looking guy?
The yes. one with the sideburns.
The Lemmy looking guy. Okay.
Yeah, so Lemmy's running for sheriff, and there's signs up everywhere, and the deputy's like, you can't run against our guy. And there's nearly a bar fight with Tierney.
Yes, Lawrence Tierney of all
Lawrence
people is
Tierney
in this movie.
Lawrence Tierney is here with a baseball bat. And the next day there were four less extras. Like, he is there just like Steve Zissou motherfucking killing people in this movie.
Yes, well, he just showed up looking like that. And they didn't have the courage to tell him to go away.
Yeah, movie notable for a werewolf killing at least two people with a baseball bat.
Yes. It happened.
It does. And then eventually, of course, the werewolf just goes on and kills another million people. But
for those who don't know, Lawrence Tierney was in Reservoir Dogs. He was the guy who put the crew together. He was
one who made Buscemi pay the fucking tip at the beginning.
And he was also Elaine's dad in Seinfeld for all of one episode before they decided he was too terrifying to work with.
Yeah, the story is he apparently, Jerry gave him a note on a line delivery and he pulled a knife on Jerry Seinfeld, so they kicked him off the show, which, you're right, fucking Lawrence Tierney probably has people who are dead in his closet.
And one other thing for those who are still a little confused, because this is our fan base, he was the voice of the security guard of the department store that Bart tried to shoplift from on The Simpsons.
That's exactly right.
In other words, a very terrifying man.
Oh, dude.
His baseball bat has Peacemaker carved into it.
Yep.
And which becomes a plot point later, because after, which I think Matt already talked about, the firework montage where Corey Haim fires the firework at the werewolf, blinds him in one eye, the sister and him figure out, well, let's do a can drive for the church. The church was doing a recycling drive of some sort.
Right.
We'll just find the dude in town missing an eye. And so she just goes to this montage of the store, the barbershop.
Now, this is such a dumb thing about this movie. I'm not that sequence. I mean, that was smart, but you need a silver bullet, even though it's already proven that you can injure a werewolf with fireworks?
Hmm. Well, maybe they didn't need to, but they thought they needed to. But whatever, it still worked.
This movie borders between being, previous episode, Monster Squad, right? And then being a horror movie. Because,
because it gets into some, like, the beginning at the church picnic, you see this woman getting left in the lurch by her boyfriend who got her pregnant, and then she attempts suicide, and then the werewolf kills her.
Right, but, like, you take out the blood, this is almost PG-13. Like, you could have the kids being sillier, swearing more, like, Bad News Bears kids are trying to sell. And then you have a monster movie that's Scooby-Doo-esque.
And
I don't know what the R rating gets us, but it's not much.
And then, good point, because they don't give R rating for necessary for scary, because the pastor in the book, I don't think it's totally clear how much he knows of what he is, at least at first. But by about halfway through the movie, he knows damn well what he is, because he's making speeches justifying what that he killed that woman to stop her from killing herself.
But, like, even the most terrifying scene, like, it's a bridge scene.
Oh, right. When the Reverend is chasing Corey Haim, and they end up on that Beetlejuice bridge that's already been condemned.
But, I mean, like, it's very much like Stand By Me or something. Like, he's desperately trying to outrun this car, and he gets just to the edge just in time, right? Like, it's that kind of a scene. There's no blood. Like, that's a PG-13 scene. You could almost do this like the Goonies fight a werewolf, right?
Like, better movie.
And, like, you can still have drunk Gary Busey. Like, you just take the labels off. He's drinking out of the bottle. He does that weird link. He's slurring.
I'm not sure if I peed into this bottle a couple days ago, but I might have.
Right. Better movie.
Yeah. Oh, boy, Gary Busey. Although, to be fair, this reminded me of a good time when Hollywood actors were allowed to be huskier, and that wasn't the point.
Oh, dude, he is rocking my future life, man. He's just dad bod and whiskey. Like, it's good.
Your future life. You're optimistic.
I don't follow.
We'll talk about that off mic.
But, like, this movie follows, like, the kids trying to solve the crime, like the Scooby gang. Like, I mean, I can almost guarantee you next season we're doing that first Scooby-Doo movie.
Oh, please no.
This is closer to a Scooby-Doo movie than we've done in a while, right?
You know what? Putting Scooby-Doo in this movie would have been better, or at least putting Shaggy in there, although technically that's Gary Busey.
Yeah, Shaggy's gotten older and fatter.
Like Zoinks.
Shaggy's old and fat, Scooby is dead, and Shaggy is drinking.
Gee whiz!
Yeah.
I could go for a Scooby snack right now.
That's the gritty reboot for the CW, Shaggy, featuring a 50-year-old private eye.
It's not Shaggy, it's just Shag.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Or Scoob. Mediocre movie. Fine. It was fine.
I didn't see it.
Wait, you don't have a 4-year-old at home?
No, I don't.
I'll tell you tales of that and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, I've got that in my queue for Hulu.
James Marsden needs... he deserves better.
Does Jim Carrey? Because he looked like the best part of that movie.
I will give you... He is Jim Carreying here, which I've missed. Watch it. Watch it, and you'll just tell me, Jim Carrey was Jim Carrey. And I'm okay with that. The rest of the movie, fine. But Jim Carrey gets to be Jim. And you know what? Method acting is nonsense. That Man in the Moon documentary made me hate him. Kinda.
I haven't seen it yet.
I like the movie, but the idea that he was just an asshole for no reason, ugh.
Oh, the Daniel Day-Lewis method.
Oh, right. But Daniel Day... I get the feeling if he's Lincoln, he's at least a nice guy. Andy Kaufman, not a nice guy. He's not.
Yeah.
Right?
No, he probably was not.
Also, he probably was not a fan of R.E.M., which makes him wrong.
Oh,
did R.E.M.? Well, okay, they did exist. Man of the Moon. Well, they only existed for like a year or two before he died, so.
That just reminded me about... There's one adult who believes the kids, the sheriff.
Yes, you're right.
And he's actually about to arrest the Reverend when Reverend then wolfs out, takes his gun away, and kills him.
They are trying, I don't know who did the makeup, but they are so hard trying to be Rick Baker in American Werewolf in London. Or for that matter, the Thriller music video.
So the Reverend is going to turn into a were-cat monster and grab his crotch?
Better movie? I don't know. It was just the same makeup effects, except especially in the end after the werewolf gets shot and they're essentially reversing the transformation.
Oh yeah, that did look like reversing transformation. Like everything is going in instead of out.
And all they had to do was like shoot it once and then keep reusing that scene over and over.
Yeah. Which I'm sure is exactly what.
But you're right. The sheriff gets killed by the hulked out Reverend Wolf. And he's also the one that has an eye patch after the sister is going around collecting cans. Cans!
Because he's like, put them in a way and I'll count them for you. And she bikes by and you see a full-on face shot if he's got one eye. Dun, yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, by that point, though, I mean, it wasn't even a cool eye patch at that point like he had later. It was just like the white bandage over his eye.
Just woke up that morning and, you know, naked in the garden and just slapped it on.
I've had Sunday mornings like that, waking up naked in a garden and wondering why I couldn't see out of one eye. We've all been there, right, Nick?
What?
You'll remember that time, you know, after college with the gypsy woman and
first
the werewolf?
First of all, after college, that's a lot of times. Second, no, but that's the name of the game here. What's the character's name? It's the Reverend.
Right, it's the
Lawrence Lowe or something.
Yeah, Reverend Lowe.
Reverend Lowe. And like he's, what do you say, Church of Christ Presbyterian?
The church that he's a preacher at says Church of Christ, but he dresses like a Catholic priest, like he has a dog collar.
Well, up until the end when he has that all white.
The Presbyterian collar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it just means nothing because the Roman collar, which has been around for, 2,000 years, everyone wears now. That's what they wear at the Methodist Church as well.
Yeah, because the book, they made a much bigger deal about why, but you know, so-and-so goes to the Baptist Church, and this is the first time he's actually seen Reverend Lowe.
So
and Reverend Lowe has only one eye.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, it
kind of like a very bad version of the Lake Wobegon Chronicles.
It does. 100%. The more you describe it, the worse it sounds. But I will say, I almost wish that they made it Catholic specifically because I think when they do Catholic paranormal, it's better, right? Like, just like Exorcist or something. Like,
well, the Catholic Church probably has some sort of order dedicated to curing werewolves by silver transfusion with blood. The local Church of Christ in Maine doesn't have that kind of resources.
Well, right. But that's my point. Like, by making him generic, like, Protestant with, like, various colors and, like, the only reason I'm pointing out is because Matt keeps saying Roman collar, which is fine, but he wears different collars throughout the movie. And so you're just like, well, I guess it's just generic Christian nonsense. So I just think, like, congregation church from whatever town, like, he's the one religious person in town, so he has to be evil, which is very Stephen King, but still, it just feels...
It's why I was wondering what Stephen King thought of religion in general and whether or not he was an atheist. I honestly don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if he was. It wouldn't surprise me if he was secretly like a Southern Baptist, but based on this movie, I just have no idea about...
Well, it just feels like he wanted to write a Southern Gothic, but it was set in Maine, so he can't just do, like, the old Baptist minister with the snakes. He just had to figure some other shit out. It just felt like nothing. Like, that's why I almost hated that he was the minister, because it feels like just a vapor. It almost would have been better if he was, like, that bartender who everyone knew, because it's the same movie. It just takes out the religion because the religion doesn't matter.
Well, it does matter. We were out of it. He has a nightmare where he's officiating a funeral and everyone turns to werewolves because that point, I think he's starting to realize what he is.
What would have been better, you didn't need him to be a werewolf in this movie. If it was like a Dario Argento giallo film where he's a serial killer who like has to kill every 30th day or so, even that nightmare sequence would have worked. But that also would have worked.
No, I'm going to stop you for a second. Because that's what we were talking about earlier. If it was just a horror movie Scooby-Doo and he threw on the wolf pelt like it was his Silence of the Lamb-esque lady suit, right? But that's what it is. He throws on the wolf coat and then they prove that he's a real person. Better movie.
Hello, I'm jumping back in because I'd like to do the soundtrack for that sequence.
Goodbye, horses. I'm riding over you. I've got some albums out there. Anybody want to sing the song along with me? Goodbye, horses.
But I mean, like, again, at the end of the day, David, that's how you ran out this movie, because, like, the generic religious nonsense, like, that kind of, like, Protestant hellfire stuff that he keeps giving at the funeral is fine, but it would have almost been better if there was, you know, Clancy Brown as the minister, and then, you know, the serial killer, whatever sort we choose to be, was just that guy who's always in the audience that everyone knows. The bartender, the head of the county store.
Lenny, in this case.
Even better. Because that's why he wants to stop the sheriff from investigating. Because he's the actual killer. But here, all he does is, like, there's one scene where the vigilantes are trying to go out and hunt the werewolf. And he's like, no, stop. Why are you trying to kill your fellow man? I need to be in this scene, I guess. They all drive off without him. It's very sloppy. And again, like, I get it. Like, it's always the Catholic priest who's the witch or fighting the witch or whatever. And so this time it's the Protestant guy. So, woo, change. But it doesn't need to be. It's just sloppy.
How long have we been recording? Because it feels like we're ready for final thoughts, personally.
Do it. Suddenly take it.
Oh, God. There are some opportunities for this movie to have been better, but as it stands, this is barely above, like, I know, like, Stephen King will sell the rights to some of his stories for a dollar to, like, student filmmakers. That's what this movie feels like, one of those. This is clunky and amateurish, and Stephen King, I've not read the original story. It doesn't sound that great, but the way it's executed is just terrible.
Matt?
I would think the book is better than the movie, but the movie, I mean, it's all right. I mean, the werewolf, I refer to it as the bear wolf, because it kind of looks like a bear, or maybe Gamark from A Neverending Story, if he was a lot skinnier and walked on two legs.
But I understood that reference. No, I don't. I have never seen that movie.
It's fine. It's all right. Maybe a rental.
So, fuck both of you. Daniel, I'm going to describe a scenario. How are we? There's a pile of candy. We've been drinking because it's Halloween. Kids are coming, they're going, they're coming, they're going. This movie is on the TV.
That's exactly what you want.
Right? Is it R-rated? Barely. Is it crazy? Yeah. Is it bad? 100%. But it's a movie you don't have to pay attention to. It's like a hangover Halloween movie, right? And it's fun as hell and stupid as hell. And when it gets slow, you just trick some treaters. Man, like, this movie I own now from Vudu for $5. I'll rewatch this one again before a lot of the movies we watch. Is it bad? Yes. It's not good. Is it a seeing is believing? Kinda, just because Gary Busey gives a handicapped kid
he gives him
a Vespa.
It's Evel Knievel's bike is what he gives him.
And again, like, and the kid is going highway speeds with a thing that straps to his wheelchair. Like, none of this makes sense.
Well, I think he has like a motorized wheelchair. It functions like a go-kart, and Gary Busey just supercharged it.
No, you're wrong, because we see him without the additions, because he goes up that ramp in his house by hand. So Gary Busey has made these additions that have a gas-powered motor for a kid who's already handicapped from the waist down. That's insane! This movie, from top to bottom, is crazy.
Dude.
This movie, that's what I'm saying. This is the movie you put on when there's trick-or-treaters, because you know what you're not going to see? Toplessness for no reason, stabbing for no reason, and when you give those kids those, like, Hershey's chocolate, you give them two Mr. Good bars and a Reese cup. You go back, you open that second beer, and you watch them fire fireworks into the eye of a werewolf. Man, there's nothing wrong with this movie. It's just stupid nonsense. And with that in mind, you know what we're going to watch next month? Stupid nonsense.
The things we do for y'all, our beloved listeners, we watch stupid nonsense.
Didn't John Landis direct that movie?
Stupid nonsense, 100%. More kids survived that one than the Twilight
Zone. Oh boy.
So, too soon.
I mean,
not really. At this point, if those were ghosts in college, they'd already been graduating with their undergrad. So, with that in mind, thanks for listening. Myopia Movies comes out every week, regardless, rain, shine. Join the Patreon. Join the Cineprov Patreon. Matt has a book. Daniel has a column. I am on Cineprov. Follow us if you like us, because we like you, and we thank you for listening.
Myopia Movies is a production of Dude Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Sheriff Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on comtech.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reichel. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys. Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Suttis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from comtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.